The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond and hello and welcome once again to IGN's weekly PlayStation Show, episode 844. I'm your host, Max Scoville, and I'm joined today by my good pals, Jada Griffin and Brian Altano. What's up, everybody? Beyond.
What's going on? I didn't get the memo of black shirts today, guys. Sorry.
That's every day.
A little bit more of a sunny attitude.
You're my clothing. Generally happier person than either of us, so that's not surprising.
Honestly, if you weren't here, I feel like this show would just be like a blank screen. It would just be mm-hmm. we'd just be like no cameras today.
We did a darkness and silence. We did a two-person episode during GDC, and like same deal. You weren't there, and there was just like nope. It was just we both wore black clothes and sat in dark rooms with LED lights, and it was beyond.
Yeah.
Tom, can you give the people at home a kind of a preview of what that might look like?
Anybody listening to the audio already knows. I'm assuming they're just I think the best listening experience for Beyond is just to turn off all your lights and just be in complete darkness. But anyway, it's not all darkness and doom and gloom today. There's a bunch of fun stuff we're gonna do. Jada, Brian, you guys sat down with the creative director of Tales of Kenzera Zhao, which is out next week. That's Abubakar mm-hmm. Salim from Sargent Studios, best known probably to a lot of people as Bayek from Assassin's Creed Origins, right?
Yeah, yep. he was a blast. We're gonna play that interview in this episode, and like it was just really really cool to talk to somebody who's worked on the performance capture and acting side of video games, but also was just like inspired by working along that to be like, screw it, I'm gonna start my own game studio, and it's gonna be a bunch of indie devs, and I have this great idea for a story that's inspired by like something that happened to my family, and like I'm gonna turn it into a whole Metroidvania, and it's just like, I don't know, it was one of those really kind of inspiring things that just sort of be like, oh yeah, you can just go make a video game. It's obviously not that easy to do that, but like,
you hear plenty about like, I don't know, actors or athletes or whatever. They're being like, I'm going to open a restaurant. I'm going to start like a tequila company or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like you don't start a game development studio unless you really want to, because that's it's a pain in the ass. Like it's
a lot of work.
Yeah. So that's coming up shortly. That game is hitting PlayStation Plus.
That's right.
Yep.
Which is awesome.
There's actually premium.
There's a bunch of pretty cool games dropping on PS Plus. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first, a few little kind of tidbits of news coming down the pipe. We got some more updates on the PlayStation 5 Pro. More rumblings and rumors about this thing that seems like it's probably happening this fall at some point. The Verge had a big story that went up about this, and apparently the code name is Trinity, which is cool and Matrix-y. And the stuff that they reported pretty much just kind of echoes what we've heard previously, and that it will have, significant performance enhancements. I think it's supposed to be, 30 times more powerful than the regular PS5, thereabouts, depending on what department you're talking about. But we should expect to see, like, a sticker that they, a metaphorical sticker or, like, messaging slapped on, PS5 games that say it's, play it best on PS5 Pro or, Trinity Enhanced or something mm-hmm. along those lines. Do these reports do anything for you too? Is this moving the needle at all?
It's getting better.
I'd say, well, based on, what the design we got for the PS5, the codename Trinity, I mean, it's just kind of in line. It's going to probably look like Trinity from the Matrix. Who knows?
You think so?
I think so.
It'll have the little glasses.
I think it'll have glasses and curves, and it's just going to be great.
just
a wig attachment you can put on there.
Completely patent leather. You got to unzip it to put discs in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a weird choice. I don't know. I never get the naming conventions with these things, you know, like the PS4 was like Orbis or something,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. I'm excited for this to get revealed and announced. You know, it's always fun to see new hardware, even if it's not something you necessarily want to jump on. There's that kind of,
Is it Trinity because it's like technically the third PS5? Like there's the base launch PS5, the slim version, and then this?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's just a stretch. I don't know.
It doesn't anyway. Make sense. I mean, Nintendo had one called Dolphin. So
yeah, yep. That's true. And then there was
the Revolution
and the Project mm-hmm. Cafe. Yeah, I don't know. I love the hype around, you know, console working titles. There's something that feels very like we'd read video game magazines growing up about that.
Like, oh, I think the DS still has NTR on the back of it for Nitro. So that was like a code name that actually made it into production in some cool little Easter eggy thing.
I mean, I remember we thought the Vita was going to be the PSP too, and then Vita came out of left field, and we're like, "All right, sure, why mm-hmm. not?"
But yeah, no. To answer your question, like I'm warming up to this thing a lot. I went from being like, "Okay, I don't really know what I'm going to do with it," but then reading some rumors about like what they're targeting specifically for their, you know, kind of legacy content and recent games and stuff like that. I don't know if they'll be able to hit 60 FPS and everything, but like, you know, clearly that. You know, according to like reporting by The Verge, like they're attempting it, and they're telling developers like, hey, if you can go back and patch these things so it can run this way, then cool, awesome. Like I'm into that concept. And again, like if I can trade in my PS5 and get this thing for not a significant hit to my wallet, then I'll go for it. If it's, you know, if this is like if there's a lot of sticker shock around this one, then you know, I'll kind of wait and see. I don't know if it'll be something I get day one. I'll probably want to see some like tests to see like, hey, this is what it's actually doing. Like, this is the actual benefit to your library, your existing library. I mean, I have hundreds of games in my PlayStation library at this point, right?
Yeah, I think so. Digital Foundry is going to have their hands full making stuff for this. So it's going to be kind of cool to see that come together.
I think it'd be cool if they pushed out like an update on PlayStation itself on your library that like had a like an extra little symbol on your PS5 games that would tell you that it was PS5 Pro better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's right. Brian, you should have just moved your mouth and I would have kept talking. People have been so confused. We all know who runs the show here at Beyond, guys.
Exactly.
I just tell Max and Brian exactly what to say every week.
Mm-hmm. For transparency, no. Max's child's daycare is out sick today, so he has a 3-year-old running around.
My daycare lady called in sick with the bad diarrhea, and I'm now runs downhill, so we're dealing with that at our end.
You know, it's one thing for us to make up rumors about each other when we're out sick and say it's diarrhea. I think it's another to just throw that on a total stranger that runs a daycare, but she made her problem your problem today, so you can talk smack
pretty much here, yeah.
Beyond.
Beyond.
How does your daycare person feel about the PS5 Pro now that they have the day off to think about?
Probably checking all the latest leaks and rumors on Digital Foundry or Insider Gaming or whatever.
Okay, I don't think you should talk about her diarrhea and then talk about leaks, by the way.
Oof. Anyway, back on track. We'll do our best here. The thing that seems interesting is that there's a lot of talk about Sony really pushing ray tracing. So it sounds like they, you know, everyone's, I feel like on the gamer side of things, obviously frame rate is a big, you know, sticking point. And this generation hasn't exactly delivered on the promise of a steady 60 frames per second.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure that we're going to continue to see performance mode and stuff like that optimized. But I imagine sort of to really push things like, That's the thing you can kind of sell. Like that's the thing you can show in a trailer. Ray tracing is easier to show in a trailer than frame rate. You know what I'm talking about?
It is. And I think it also, like, I think it looks better on like a Best Buy TV, basically. Like you're in there, like, mm-hmm. and there's a PS5 hooked up and there's a kiosk. It's showing you all the bells and whistles. Like I think that people are, I'm not going to say that like frame rate is something they don't really think about, but I think the average consumer would be attracted to something that's a little more showcasey than frame rate. Like I know that like when HDR first came out, like seeing that for the first time, I was like, oh man, this is, this is completely selling me on this tech. This is the kind of thing I want to buy a TV for. And like, you know, I got all in on that idea and it turned out really cool. Like it's one of those things where I love seeing like a sunset in HDR on in a video game. It's like when light comes peeking through or like you're in the settings at the beginning of a game and it's like, it's asking you to, you know, dim the skull until you can't see it anymore and you lie to it or whatever, and you keep it brighter than it is because you might be scared. I love that stuff. So we'll see what they can actually deliver on. I'm a little skeptical. I think that like this generation's been sort of, I think it, in retrospect, we're going to look at it as kind of like a half measure tech-wise. I think a lot of the big tech this generation has been stuff like, you know, quick resume and being able to like, you know, save states and all the stuff that's like baked into the PS5 and the Series X and stuff like that. That's like a little more like, you know, the UI is snappier. It's easier to get around the stores and stuff like that. It's easier to jump in and out of multiplayer. All of that stuff is like really, really good and it adds to the user experience. But I don't think we're going to get that 60 FPS across the board for all games dream that I think we might have thought we were sold on before this generation started.
So Brian, would it be safe to say that you're ready for your rays to be so traced?
Yeah. Yeah. I love ray tracing. He's just one of my uncles in New Jersey. He's a great dude.
I like him a lot more than that Michael Transactions fellow. Let me tell
Michael
you.
Michael Transactions has got to get out of here. And Robert Tomatoes, that guy that ruins all the movies. I'm sick of his crap too.
All right. So some other little tidbits of news. I kind of talked some smack. I said I was sort of unimpressed by the creatures in Stellar Blade in the demo that we saw. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, a jury's still out on that, but Sony put up an interesting feature about how one of the creature designers from The Host and Okja worked on this and sculpted them out of clay. And there's a pretty cool, interesting little behind the scene about these the Natiba creatures. He Chul Jang, I think. I might be butchering that, but basically there's a very brief video that shows these cool, like, you know, clay sculptures. And I wish they had better, clearer shots of them. But I love the idea of making, you know, making video game creatures practically and then scanning them into the game, which
that's
is
awesome.
Yeah,
it's like I appreciate the transparency of the team doing like these making of things before the game is out. I usually kind of wince at like the BCD stuff we get. Like Max and I have been griping about this for years. Well, they'll just like show shots of people's desks with blurred monitors. And it's just, they go on this existential talk about like what they want to do in the next Mass Effect game or something like that.
I mean, BioWare is like especially bad about this, where it's just like cool footage of people sitting at their desks and like a slow pan of a concept art JPEG, you know?
Yeah.
I'm all for seeing how things are made, but when it's used as specifically just marketing materials, not so much. This is still being used as marketing materials, but it is kind of a cool insight to be like,
it's
hey,
really awesome. I love that they showed just like pictures of the models they're working on and how they scanned them. What were you saying, Jada?
I was gonna say it's just, you know, it's one thing to show like artwork and stuff, it's another thing to like kind of go into the process of that art being created and stuff like that and how it's being implemented and put in there. Like, yes, we see concept art all the time for games, like, you know, there's art books and stuff that are released constantly, so we see that stuff, but you know, I can't buy an art book that shows off this 3D model of this clay that they built for these creatures. You know what I mean? I can't buy these clay creatures.
So funny thing, I picked up a book on sculpting by these guys called the Shiflet Brothers, who do like amazing statues and stuff. And this guy might have had some stuff in there. Like there were some guest sculptors showing off their things. The funny thing is, if you pick up an art book for things that get made nowadays, most of the time it's just digital. Like there's so much sort of, you know, rapid concept art, you know, visual vis dev or whatever. And it's just, you know, it just looks like rushed, you know, rushed Photoshop paintings. And occasionally you get really cool sketches and really, you know, in-depth digital painting. But it feels like a kind of a far cry from, you know, looking at old, you know, Ralph McQuarrie, Sid Mead concept sketches for old movies.
No, I have an entire shelf. I know, Max, you have a good collection too, of like Star Wars art books, right? And making of art books. And when they said that Star Wars Outlaws is going to have like all of the, everything they're making around that game is digital, right? Which I get it. I'm like an all digital person when it comes to games, but like they're doing a digital art book for that. And like, I don't want to look at that on my TV. I want to look at that on my couch. I have the Star Wars Jedi Survivor, Was that the first game? The first one? Yeah.
Fallen Order.
Fallen Order. Yeah. So I have the art book for that game and I love it. It's super cool. Like there's a bunch of sketches and like ideas of like how they created the enemies and the creatures and the, you know, saber designs and Cal's costumes and stuff like that. I love all that stuff. It's so cool. And like it bums me out when we don't get that. So I hope Stellar Blade gets like a dedicated art book. Honestly,
I'm sure it'll get an art book.
Oh, it'll get something. Yeah. But no, we're going to talk about this game when it's out. And we've all, you know, gotten plenty of time with it. A lot of the conversation about this game has been dominated about the protagonist, which is totally understandable because she's a beautiful woman wearing skimpy clothes. So that's obviously a big point of discussion. But I've always been like a weirdo creature puppet monster guy. So like for Stellar Blade, like a lot of the make it or break it for me is going to be about like the creature design and the boss fights and stuff like that. Like I know it's not really like a Souls like, it's kind of more of a character action game, but like I'm really excited to see what they do in terms of like big, hideous, horrible monsters.
You can fight.
There's a couple of good ones in the demo, like, you know, like there's that guy with the big ball sack hands and stuff like that. So I want to beat those beasts up, bash those guys around.
Seeing these clay sculptures actually totally, you know, piqued my interest about this. And that game is coming at us pretty quick. We're going to be talking about that at some point down the road. I would love to hear what people want to know about it. We'll track down whoever's going to review it for IGN and probably get them on here. And it'd just be good to get in front of that. So if you have questions, drop in the comments or shoot us an email beyond@IGN.com or, head over to the Facebook group, whatever you want to do, just tweet it at us. Open the window and yell about Stellar Blade, do what you got to do. On a sort of related note, this site, let's see, AmpereAnalysis.com did a thing digging into the fact that Stellar Blade demo numbers are like twice that of FF7 Rebirth demo, which is pretty impressive. I mean, some of that might be stemming from the fact that FF7 kind of a known quantity in terms, because, you know, if you played the remake, you sort of know what you're in for. And I think a lot of people are maybe saving the experience, like they don't want to play the demo and then, they want to experience it in the full game. But yeah, substantially, like based on sort of active players on PS5, a lot of people are checking out Stellar Blade. So if that actually translates to sales, this could clean up substantially. This could be a,
you know. I mean, there's been talk that like the FF7 Rebirth is not really selling. It's selling at like half the rate of the first one. And like, if you actually stop and think about it, it makes a ton of sense because like there's a lot of baggage there. And I don't mean negative baggage because it's, you know, it's a world-renowned series. It's immensely popular. People love the new game. People love the last game leading up to this. But like, I think it's a lot easier to just step in. And this is weird because this is antithetical to what data analysts told us for years about IPs, right? Like everybody was like, it's really hard to launch a new IP because like customers like a number in the title. And I think there's a finite cap to that. Like, not to keep circling back to Star Wars, but I remember like somewhere around episode 8 or 7, something like that, they were like, hey, we're going to ditch the numbers and the titles and stuff like that. You'll see them in the opening crawl. But like, we don't want to scare off the average consumer into thinking like, oh man, I got to watch like 8 movies before I see the new one or whatever. I think people, like the average consumer, just average Joe gamer, right, looks at FF7 Rebirth and they think, okay, so this is the 7th game in the series. It's like the 50th, right? But it's also a remake of a classic game, but it's not the whole game. It's the second part of a remake of a classic game. And it's the middle of a trilogy. So not only do I have to play the first one first that I didn't play, should I also play the original?
Oh, then, but wait, it gets worse. Because there was the sort of boy who cried wolf thing because FF7 Remake came out, not the entire game. And then we got Intergrade, which is a sort of, you know, DLC expansion. And then there was Crisis Core, which is that required reading for Rebirth? Hard to say, probably. And yeah, all that is... It diminishes the impact of the, you know, second coming of FF7. So
it's also locked to one console that costs $500 to get. It doesn't have the benefit of the PS4 user base. It doesn't have the benefit of the pandemic, which was like the first one launched in what, 2020? FF7. And like that's, you know, there's a lot of logical reasons why that would kind of push into that direction, but it's also a little surprising because it's, you know, I imagine Square is looking at this and they're like, crap, like, what do we do here? And mm-hmm. I think it's like, mm-hmm. it talks to the bigger conversation that we've had multiple times in the show that they're having all around the industry, that like having games launch only on one console in 2024 is like a very big risk. You look at something like mm-hmm. Helldivers 2, like that's a sequel to a game that's like, you don't need to play the first one at all. People very clearly understand like this is almost a reboot, or like, you know, this is a whole new take on it. And it launched on PS5 and PC at the same time, day and date. And so like people were able to jump into that without worrying too much about it. And so, yeah, I think that like, you're going to see some interest. I think that FF7 Rebirth is going to be sort of the dying breed in terms of like single console launch experiments. And it also adds some justification to why for so many years, you know, we winced and we were like, why is Horizon and God of War cross-generation games? Like, it's so annoying. Just go all in on the new platform. This is why, because it's like, it's really hard to make your money back on a 200 something million dollar game if you're only going in one direction. Obviously, mm-hmm. it's selfishly, if you just have a PS5, you're like, well, I get the best experience here because this mm-hmm. is a gorgeous game and it's benefiting from all the bells and whistles and power that comes with the PS5. But it's harder to get funding for the next game or justify putting as much development cost into the next game if you can't break even on this one.
But while we're on the subject of, you know, console exclusives, big old PlayStation exclusives, and remakes of Square Enix games, Jada, the other day you were saying you wanted a remake of The Bouncer, a remaster of The Bouncer.
I have
sort of good news for you. They're remaking The Bouncer for PS5, but it's the game for the weapon for Ratchet and Clank, The Bouncer. Different Bouncer. Sorry, I didn't mean to set it up that way. But that you were literally saying, I think yesterday,
yes.
You were like, I wish that they'd remake The Bouncer. And then today this news popped up that totally unrelated Bouncer, Ratchet and Clank, in celebration of its 8th anniversary, is getting the classic gun, The Bouncer, put in the game. So if you missed that in the 2016 game, now it's...
I can get it. It's a fantastic weapon too. If you haven't used the Bouncer in a Ratchet and Clank game, go boot up 2016 Ratchet and Clank and get this weapon. It is fantastic. It shoots a bunch of little like homing balls that bounce around and explode on people.
It's a good time.
It's a great time.
Now we are going to toss to this
another Bouncer remake on Amazon Prime starring Jake Gyllenhaal right now. It's called Roadhouse.
I watched that. Not bad.
It's a good time movie. For Bouncer remakes, yeah. Anyway, we have to bounce over to this interview with Tales of Kanzera Zhao and Abubakar Salem. So let's take a look.
Hello and beyond. Tales of Kanzera Zhao is the gorgeous new action platformer from Surgeon Studios, and Abubakar Salem, who is here to tell us all about it himself. Hey, Abu.
What's up?
What's going on? Coming, man.
That was really cool. That was, you know, it's so funny. Every time I get introduced, I'm always a bit like, oh boy, it's real. Oh boy, it's real. it's very surreal because again, like the game was such a secret for so long. And now like, normally I'm used to people being like, oh yeah, it's Abu from Raised by Wolves or Abu from a TV show. Now it's like, you're saying the name of the game. I'm like, oh, it's coming.
Yeah, this is on you this time. Like you can't just blame all the other people you worked on or get the praise.
Like,
it's not, you know, like you did this with the studio. It's a small team working on this, but like, yeah, you're front and center, man. So no pressure.
Thanks.
Every time someone says no pressure, it's like, oh, that means pressure, doesn't it?
That means real pressure.
tell us a bit about the story behind this game, because you've been known for acting and performance capture and voice acting. And then you're like, I want to make a Metroidvania like that. There's Tom Cruise isn't out there being like, you know what I got to do? I got to make a 3D collectathon for the N64. Like, I love this about you.
You don't know, bro. You don't know, okay?
Honestly, it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me. Tales of Kanzera.
Yeah, so Tales of Kanzera Zhao really came about as it was a way of essentially processing my grief. I lost my father 10 years ago, and it was one of those ones where for a while it was tough, right? It's always tough. I mean, like the best way I can describe it is like it wasn't really part of the plan. So it kind of took mm-hmm. me by surprise. And I think, you know, for 10 years, I've been kind of going through this whole journey as a whole. And 4 years ago, I decided, actually, you know what? I think I know how I can process an element of it, and it has to be through a video game. It was one of those ones as well where, like, death in our family is so common, like, so common because we're so big, but when it comes so close, it just takes you aback a bit. So, right. Yeah, the game is, you know, it's inspired by sort of the Bantu myths and legends, you know, lots of stories that my father would tell me as a kid. You know, the reason why it's a Metroidvania is because I think that's the perfect genre to sort of depict grief, in the sense that you're thrown in the middle of something you have no idea about, and you've got to work it out as you go along. You know, the longer you spend in it, the more comfortable you get, you know, and that's essentially grief, man. And so that's kind of, you know, why it had to be a Metroidvania. And, you know, the 2.5D side scroller element is because I used to play Sonic with my dad, and like that, you know, that kind of feeling I wanted to kind of capture in this game.
That you just completely blew my mind with, like, the Metroidvania is a good genre to process death. I've grieved before, and like, that's just like, I mean, that you just opened a door for me, which is what those games are about, really. Like, man,
yeah,
I needed a second there. Damn, that was really good.
I was just gonna say, like, you know, the thing is, it's one of those ones where every time I've sort of played it, there is this weird isolated feeling that you get from it, right? That you're kind of journeying through this thing. It's your own experience, and, you know, the abilities that you find it in your own time. And I think, like, that's basically grief, man. Like, it's, you know, you find a way to deal with, there's no sort of right or wrong way. There's only your way. And I think, like, that's essentially what a Metroidvania is.
That's so, like, on point, because, you know, I've lost family members. I think we all have. And, you know, you get past one hump and you're like, okay, I'm doing better. And then something else hits you, and then you're not expecting it, and you've got to figure out, how do I move past this now? How do I deal with this? How do I process this? So that's just super powerful, like, spot on. Like, I've never had anybody, like, connect Metroidvania to that, but, like, you should be teaching game theory, man. Like, yeah. Like, that's like, that was...
I've used video games to process death, like God of War specifically, the rebooted one, but I'd never thought about sort of like taking that and turning it into making something while also simultaneously immortalizing a lost one, which you're doing here. That's just like such an awesome story. I guess it got me thinking too, like, what's interesting about what Tales of K'Zero is doing is that it sort of lets you, like, right off the bat, right at the start of the game, one of the first things that struck me was, like, you get a double jump and an air dash, and your combat feels good and not necessarily evolved, because you learn more and more stuff, but, like, it throws you right in with, like, a lot of maneuverability and a lot of, like, this sort of ancient classic Metroidvania. I mean, literally Metroid, it takes so long to get any sort of semblance of, like, oh, I got some speed. All right, finally, I got a wall jump. Okay, cool. Like, you're like a couple hours into the game. But in Tales of K'Zero, like, I'm like, oh, crap, I got a double jump and an air dash immediately. I see this thing really far from me. I can already get to it. So was that something that you thought about? Like, I want this to be quick right out the gate.
Yeah, because again, it's that whole thing of, again, just, so the thing is, right, we're a small team, so we've got to really sort of make sure that every decision counts. We don't want to make a choice and have to pivot, because that will take us ages. But really, you know, from the get-go, I said, you know, I want these abilities, these fun abilities that you kind of get, because, again, in life, you know, I was thrown into this sort of deep end, but it's not like I kind of, you know, come anew. It's like I've had experience. I've had previous experience, past experience. And I think, like, that's the best way of, again, respecting communicating, essentially, like, Zhao, the character, has, you know, he's living his life. He's, you know, he's got history. He's got a past. Double jump, dash, you know, all that kind of, you know, attacks and wall jumps. Like, this is his past. And, like, rather than give the player nothing from the get-go, it's like, no, this is what you've got. You've got to, you know, now go ahead on your journey and deal with it. And I think, like, that was something that, again, to really kind of capture and sort of communicate that element of grief in an honest and truthful way, you have to throw someone in the deep end, but with at least some tools that you kind of expect them to have, you know?
No, I respect that, and I appreciate it too. As someone who plays a lot of Metroidvanias, it was awesome to just like immediately hit the ground running and be like, "Oh, I got some power and some speed. Let's kick some butt."
Yeah. Speaking of huge Metroidvanias, can you tell us a little bit about what it was like not only making one, but making it one as your first game? Like, did you want to get right, like overall as a Metroidvania?
I think my team were literally like, of all the games to make as a first one, man, why a Metroidvania?
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, you could have done like a match 3 puzzle game. They would have been like, oh, that's a little easier. We got this.
You know?
visual novel, like.
Oh, man. You know, and the community, like, they care, right? The Metroidvania community, if you're going to make it, like, step up. Like, don't come in and say you're just going to make something. No, it was good. It was tough because I think, like, the elements of having to balance a lot and play with a lot and think about the journey and think about pacing of story. I think matching story with a Metroidvania genre, like, I can totally understand why not many games do it, because there's so much, you know, there's so much to explore, there's so much to see, and to be able to kind of keep the pacing of a story going in that kind of space is very hard. So it's like, you know, we really had to manage and maneuver a lot of things at the same time. And again, like, the team as well, like, the journey has been, you know, starting a studio, making our first game, forming our team for the first time. So we don't even know each other, and we're having to figure out how we're going to work with one another. Like, it's been And it's been such a journey in regards to kind of conjuring this experience. At the same time, you know, we're dealing with COVID or we're dealing with other elements, you know, and it's like, oh, right, I'm learning what it means to run a business. I'm learning what it means to write a script. Like, it's, there's so many learnings out of this whole thing. But truly, I think the one thing that's been really lovely is that we've all been driven by this mentality of wanting to tell an honest and truthful story. And I think like that has really driven us to get to where we are now, to like, you know, to the end goal, to actually shipping a game. It's been really beautiful to kind of watch us just grow and strengthen and become a team, become a studio, you know? So yeah, the Metroidvania genre is definitely a tricky and tough one, but I'm glad we had something that needed that maneuvering, because it required us to focus and work as a team a lot more delicately and carefully, you know?
Right. And you were, you know, you've been doing acting, performance capture, voice acting, all this stuff for years now. You were the main character in Assassin's Creed Origins. Like, was it like something where you were part of a contribution to a game, where you're part of a game development, right? That made you go like, hey, I want to dig in deeper and see like what this whole thing feels like, to kind of take every element of it.
It's funny. I think, so Assassin's Creed Origins just, it sort of made me realize that even though I've been playing games all my life, like I love games, but like the fact is that with Assassin's Creed, it made me realize that you could have a job in games. Which is crazy, because I never thought that you could actually, you know, I didn't really realize that there were people behind these things making them. I kind of thought you put like a CD in the PS2 and Gremlins or something, make it happen. Like, I had no idea, like really, truly the realities of it all. But what Assassin's Creed did was it introduced me to players and developers who love games, who just truly love the creation process as well as playing them. And I think like, it was really, it's so different from like working on a TV or a film set, where a lot of the time, you know, people are there to just do a job and then they go home. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Whereas in games, it feels like there is this passion, like everyone's an artist and they really do care about what they're doing and what they're bringing. And I think like, that's what I really loved being around. I was also a massive Assassin's Creed fan. So I was constantly, when I wasn't filming, which was very rare, I was in the offices testing the game, playing the game and seeing what it was like and asking questions, because I'd ask too many questions and like very, very inquisitive, because that's the only way I can learn essentially, right? And so for me, you know, that kind of opened my eyes to it all. But it was only until like what, three years I think later, until I decided like, actually this is what I want to do. And I know Ubisoft isn't necessarily the best team to kind of like, or you know, option, because there's like thousands and thousands upon people, we're only like 30, right? So it's like such a different beast, but it really did inspire me. And especially Montreal's got a real lovely energy about game development there that I think it's very infectious.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm glad you weren't like, you know what I got to do is start a global studio with like 16 different.
Oh, oh my god! Absolutely,
16 different offices,
every continent. My lord!
Oh my god!
Your passion, like it's. I've been watching this game since I think it debuted at Game Awards last year.
Yeah,
and we had it. We had a segment I think for Fan Fest this year, and then like I got to meet you at GDC, and like your passion for this project and this game is just like, it's what took this game being like, I want to play that, to like, this is a day one play for me. I need to play this as soon as it drops, man, and nonstop. And like, you know, I've played through it at this point and I didn't stop. And once I started, like legitimately, like I just couldn't put it down. And you know, that's a little bit to do with my like addictive personality of like, when I start something, I want to play it all the way through. Right. But I was engrossed through the whole way through for this.
Oh, that's so like,
your
good
passion, it's showcased everywhere in this game, from the music to the scenery, the art, just everything. It screams just authenticity and passion. Like, you know, how important was it for you to kind of nail those aspects, especially because this isn't a location that we often see in games?
I mean, you know, for me, it was very much the sense of, if I kind of had this mentality, and I think a lot of us did, like, you know, we only have one chance to essentially do this, right? So if we really want to do this right, like, let's let's do it right. And I think for us, it was very much, again, so I've always kind of led by this thought as an actor of, and it was taught to me by a teacher who essentially said, like, you know, a lot of the time, whenever you do something or you give yourself to something, the audience who are receiving it, there's always going to be someone in the audience who's going to receive it for the first time. And there's always going to be someone in there who's going to receive it for the last time. And that really stuck with me. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, so if I do something, I've got to either show that person who's coming for the first time, like, hey, you're going to want to see more of this, but also ensure that the last, you know, the person who might see it for the last time due to either a tragedy or whatever, like, they get a good experience. And so it needs to be authentic. It needs to be honest. It needs to be truthful. And so, like, there, you know, that's always been our sort of mantra at the studio from the get-go. It's like, you know, we've got to be honest and authentic. It's got to be about the human truth, about, like, what makes us human, because that's what's exciting, rather than necessarily, you know, I guess the thing is, it's like focusing on authenticity and truthfulness. It goes beyond sort of like race or gender or anything like that. It just connects us. And I think, like, that was what was driving us with this game and what really drove me to tell this story. Like, I didn't want to, you know, the reason being for this, or telling the story, yes, it was inspired by my father, but it's also inspired by this journey that I went through, that I wanted to say, like, hey, to everyone else, like, you're not alone. Like, we're all mm-hmm. going to go through something like this. Even though it feels isolating, it's not always the same way. Like, you're not going to come to an end point and be, oh, I'm accepting it all. Like, that's not how it works. And, you know, you might feel angry sometimes. You might even feel happy sometimes. And that's totally fine. Like, I think, like, that's what we was really the sort of, it was the fuel for creating this thing and being, and, you know, wanting to share it. It's ensuring that we're giving an authentic experience to people. So it's funny. It's like, I always say this, if it wasn't so personal, I think I probably would have quit after, like, the first year. Game day, hard.
I understand that, like, you know, games are a business, right? Like, they are the intersection of art and money, and, like, somebody, you do have to sell a product at the end of the day. But, like, I really hope people hear your story here and they really recognize that people generally get into game design and game development because they give a shit. They're passionate. They really truly care. And, like, I love that for you, man. I love that you're making something that you care about. I hope you're studio keeps making games like this for decades and decades, and you get to, you know, one day obtain your dream of running a global studio with thousands of offices all over.
Thousands of people. Oh my god! No, man.
You're like, I'm good. No, but Abu, thank you so much, man. Like, thank you for joining us today and for telling us about your game. It's coming a PlayStation Plus Extra and Premium. So all of our PlayStation fans that listen to the show, you can get it right there. That's April 23rd, right?
Yeah, April 23rd.
It's coming up.
Sorry. It's almost here.
All right,
it's
so almost go here. Get Tales of Kenzera Zao on every platform, but also on PlayStation and Plus and Premium on April 23rd. Abu, thank you so much, man, and congrats on the launch of your game, and good luck for years to come.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, guys.
All right, and we're back. So yeah, Tales of Kenzera is hitting PlayStation Plus, the two higher ones, I think,
and Premium.
Silver and Gold, whatever. Gold, Platinum, and so I don't. Anyway, that's out of
Platinum, I guess, technically.
That's coming on the 23rd. There's a bunch of other stuff. There's Animal Well coming on May 9th, which I totally had never heard of. That's about a well full of animals that you go into. It definitely looks like a weird old indie game.
Yeah, you play as this little creature, you go into this well, and then there's all these bunch of animals, and you're just kind of exploring, and it's very much about kind of figuring out things as you explore, and you get these, like, really weird tools, like a yo-yo and stuff that you use. It's a very strange game, but it looks very cool, and it's got a lot of hype around it. So this is definitely one for our listeners to keep an eye out for, and definitely give it a try.
I was on NVC a few weeks back, and they completely sold me on this game. Like, it's just and folks played it at PAX and stuff like that, and I believe GDC. Like, it looks awesome. It's got, like, a little bit of Cave Story, a little bit of Rain World to it. Totally my jam.
That looks cool. So that's out. Those are both out kind of down the road a little bit, but out now, out starting on the 16th, a bunch of stuff hitting PlayStation Plus. There's Raji, an ancient epic. A bunch of these have kind of come to other platforms already, but like, hey, like mm-hmm. if you didn't want to pay for them and you subscribe, like this is a good time. There's Raji, an ancient epic, which is a sort of like Indian, like isometric action RPG kind of game, action adventure game. There is Deliver Us Mars, which is from the people who did Deliver Us the Moon, kind of narrative space exploration type of thing. There is Miasma Chronicles. A bunch of these games are like things that we did interviews or segments or whatever. So we had Brian and I had to do like, you know, tertiary research for them. Mm-hmm. Miasma Chronicles is from the devs that did Mutant Year Zero. And it's a sort of tactical, tactical strategy game when you're in combat, real-time exploration, otherwise. And the thing that always kind of hooked me about it is I think it's not based on, but loosely inspired by Full Metal Alchemist, where you play as like a little kid and then his robot brother. And it's in a grimy ass post-apocalypse. So there's that. There is Stray Blade, which is a fantasy action RPG that IGN gave a 5 out of 10. I don't know if that's necessarily much to write home about. There's Oddballers, which is a dodgeball with rabbits. There's Lego Ninjago, the movie, and then Lego Avengers, which are both Lego games if you're looking for things to platinum, I guess. There's The Crew 2, RIP, The Crew number one.
The Crew
car game.
The
not,
Crew.
Not The Croods, The Crew. Okay. And then if those cars are too fast, there's Construction Simulator, which has a bunch of much slower cars that you use to push dirt around. And then one that caught mine is Nur. Have you seen this game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one's been...
How do you spell it?
It's a super weird. N-O-U-R.
Yeah, like the beginning of Nourish, but not... It's like a weird psychedelic food puzzle game with really, really, really pretty graphics.
Oh, yeah. Nour, play with your food.
Nour?
Nour.
Nour. No, I don't know. Yeah.
Nour.
Yeah, so I'm going to mess with that for sure. I'm currently hooked, no pun intended, getting pretty deep into Dave the Diver. I took the plunge.
That
really
was
just
pun intended. Don't just own it, Max.
I decided I should just jump right in and just, you know, see what's...
I got really into that game on Switch.
Plumb the depth.
You didn't want to dive right in. Mm-hmm. Just go all in, Max.
Dive in. Okay, no, but yeah, obviously this game has gotten its share of hype already, and I don't know. It's been a minute since I've gotten, you know, into, for lack of a better word, an indie game. This is also debatably an indie game because it's from, you know, bigger publisher or whatever, had like a decent budget behind it, what have you. I know there's some controversy at the Game Awards or whatever, but like it you know, it's a twee little kind of pixelated type of game. I feel like I haven't really had the patience for those lately, or haven't had the interest, but this one totally blew me away, completely like impressed me and surprised me, and I'm having a really good time with it. And it's somewhere between ridiculous fishing and then a Yakuza management sim. And it's just the right amount of, you know, it's a little bit of a roguelike too. You know, you go in the water and you got to shoot the fish with a gun and then bring them back up. And it's just like, yeah, it'll get you hooked. I don't know.
I will say that most games that attempt to juggle even half this many genres fail, or they do this thing that's kind of like jack of all trades, you know, master of none, effectively, where they're like, all right, you know, it's a pretty good platformer, but it's like a terrible item management or blah blah blah, or like, you know, the fishing controls are awesome, but like the RPG stuff sucks. Dave the Diver, like, everything works really well and it sings together in harmony really well too, which is pretty surprising considering how much it's sort of attempting to bite off. But yeah, really, really special game. I believe it's on like every platform now. So
yeah,
like I played it on Switch. I think it especially works well as kind of like a chill handheld game. If you have the PlayStation Portal, you know, check it out there too, or Steam Deck or whatever.
That was my thought initially, is like, I want to play this game on Switch on the go, because I don't know, there's that feeling of like, this isn't a big, huge 4K 60 FPS game. Why does it need to be on my big TV? Like, it seems like very much a portable experience. That said, they did a bunch of silly ass bells and whistles for the DualSense on this, and I really appreciate it. There's parts where you have to like pour tea or pour beer, and it's a little like I feel like they could have made that a motion control thing, but they thankfully didn't. But they do have the most like wet noise coming out of your controller, and my wife just kept being like, can you turn that, it sounds like somebody's like pissing in our house, like what are you like, and you just keep doing it. I got a code for House Flipper 2, which is like surprisingly deep game. It's one of those kind of, you know, semi type games where you can you know, fix up a house, clean it up and do all that. And there's like a whole, you know, like campaign about doing real estate and things like that. But it is sort of, there's things in the corner of that game I wasn't expecting. I made a joke in some video we did, Brian, I think it was like a toss to a trailer in Summer of Gaming or something like that, where I was saying that, like, I wish that they made a prequel to Power Wash Simulator where you didn't have a power washer yet. Like you hadn't resorted to that. And you have to just wash everything with like magic erasers and soap.
Mm-hmm.
That's just this game. Like you, like, like the first thing you do is you show up and there's this house that a raccoon got into and there's just like footprints and garbage everywhere. And you have to like go in and like pick up the trash and like, you know, clean it up. And that's very much like, you know, early game. From there, you know, you go into full on construction and like you can, there's like impressively deep, like first person, you know, building aspects to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I went on the, there's like a whole mod section too. I went on there and I downloaded a mod that is just the Winnebago from Breaking Bad. And somebody made like Breaking Bad mode where it's just like, Jesse, we got to cook, but there's crap everywhere. Can you clean it up? And I just went and like washed off the side of the Winnebago so we could cook. You don't actually, you know, cook, Matt. That's an unofficial thing, but it was just like really kind of cool to see people do that. So I don't know. It's just,
I played a bunch of the first one on Game Pass. And I believe at the same time, Power Wash Simulator came out there and my brain couldn't sustain both at once. And I ended up getting like super hooked on Power Wash Simulator, but I respect what this one's doing. Like it's a very silly thing, but it's also like just totally cathartic. I don't really know how to explain it. Like it's, I don't know. I find the entire idea of like the housing market and making money off of it to be revolting. But in a video game, I'm like, I'll clean up this dumb house and then sell it and make.
Yeah, I mean,
money.
I think it's more sort of like Monster of the Week approach to doing chores. And again, there's still that mm-hmm. thing in the back of my head where I'm like, I could get up and go do real chores, but I'm like, but it's easier in the game, and I could throw the garbage so bag cheaper. Real far.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Power Wash Simulator, I mentioned back during my trophy sprints that Power Wash Simulator's Platinum was bugged. They finally fixed it. Thank you, devs, for listening. I'm sure that my Beyond rant is what made you fix that bug.
Did you get the final ding noise?
Yes, I booted it up and got the ding. I'm now at 102 Platinums.
Good God.
What was stopping you from getting the final trophy in that game?
It just, it wasn't giving you a trophy for finishing the last stage of the campaign.
Okay.
Like is literally, and so like thankfully I didn't even have to replay the stage. I just literally booted it up and on boot up it dinged the trophy for me. So I was like, sweet, I can remove this from my hard drive and make some space for some other games coming out.
The thing that I really love, the sort of ultimate fantasy in that game, is just having a machine that just evaporates crap in your house. You know, like you're like, oh, I don't need that old painting of a fish, and you just shoot it and it just gives you $5. Like I wish there was like a pawn shop gun I could just point at things and just, you know.
Yeah, or like instead of like getting, when there's, you get those weird flyers on your mailbox for like some guy that takes big bulk items once a month or whatever, to just have a magical gun there, they disappear. I would love
that.
That'd
be great.
Instead of having awesome. Although I do like going to the dump in real life. That's a cool place.
I love the dump. It's awesome.
Oh yeah,
cool stuff.
I don't think I've ever been to a dump.
Oh, there's a really good dump in San Rafael. We should all go one day. It's great.
Sounds like a good team building exercise.
One of the top three dumps I've ever seen, and I grew up in New Jersey. They have some good dumps there.
Speaking of dumps, on the opposite side, there is a bunch of games getting dumped off of PS Plus, and I just want to give a couple of them shout outs for. Last chance to go play these. These are leaving in May for PS Plus. This involves Final Fantasy VII, the original, Final Fantasy VIII, IX, X, X-2, XII, XV, and World of Final Fantasy. So if you're in the middle of your Final Fantasy you know, playthrough of playing them all this year, like I am, make sure you either own these or speed up your playthroughs. other ones I would give a shout out to, definitely check out Jotun. You play as this little dude and you're slaying a bunch of Norse gods and stuff like that. So that one's awesome. Highly recommend it. Minute, great little indie game where you move a minute at a time and you just kind of have to keep doing stuff and it gets better and better. And you get further and further with each minute.
That's MINT, right?
MINIT. Yes.
Yeah, there's a bunch of indies.
There's mint.
What? There's like
mint.
Abzu and Absolver and my friend Pedro and the Messenger, all like pretty solid indie games that.
Yep. And a lot of those you can finish pretty quickly.
Yeah. So if you're looking to kind of, you know, I guess have a deadline on playing video games, there you go. Speaking of deadlines, we got to wrap things up real quick. But first, I want to give a shout out to IGN Rewards. It's a friendly reminder. You can sign up for this for free. They're giving away a bunch of stuff, just like a whole, like just a really an absurd amount of things. There are custom Nintendo Switches based on the games Let's Revolution, Slave Zero X, Astro Duel 2. We're giving away Dreamlight Valley Cozy Edition for multiple consoles, Outcast, A New Beginning. And of course, we're giving away VIP tickets to IGN Live, which is happening later this summer. And then of course, you could also win, I sh** you not, a Kung Fu Panda 4 poster autographed by Jack Black. So head over that to IGN.com/rewards and sign up for free, and you could get even more free stuff. And our producer says that he found a pretty cool image of what the Trinity PS5 Pro could look like. I cannot wait to see that Photoshop. You know, for those of you listening at home, you're not missing much. It is a picture of Carrie Ann Moss on the side of a PS5.
And it looks to be stretched. It does not look great.
So I mean, you could probably make this and then demand your money back and say that it was warped and that it was defective, and they'd be like, that's not a good, you know.
I love that the watermark said IGN secret on it. no one would ever describe an internal document as a secret.
And Tom gave us a quick update. He said, I'm warped and defective. So sorry, we love him anyway. So huge thanks to Tom behind the scenes for working on stuff. Tom. No thanks to my daughter's daycare lady for getting diarrhea. And no thanks to my daughter for coming in and grabbing this extremely toxic epoxy stick of plumber's putty out of my drawer and like really thinking she needed that. One of the most carcinogenic things in this house. Just made a beeline right for it. I'm going to go do some parenting. Yeah, exactly. Thanks to everybody listening, watching at home. We will see you next week. Beyond.
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 Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.